And welcome back to the Sean Green Show. I'm Sean Green. I want to thank everybody out there for listening. Make sure you check out the SeanGreenShow.com. Make sure you check out the Facebook page. Make sure you check out the YouTube page. Everything is there as far as interviews, everything you want to hear, upcoming events. Right now, the review editor at Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGMNow.com, Ray Carcillo, and also at RayCarcillo.com. He's joining us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline. Hey, what's going on, buddy?
How much, Sean? How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing all right. So today is the big day that everybody's been waiting for. Madden 2015 is out right now. So, all right, tell me, what are the new features that we have in Madden 15?
Well, you know, it's actually, I'm really impressed with what they're able to do this year, because obviously with Madden being a yearly franchise, really the past like 7 or 8 years, the whole past console generation, there's only been really small differences, but it really seemed that now that they've got a year under their belt with next gen, they really wanted to try and make some really massive differences with the games on both sides, well, even in special teams. They have a new kicking meter, where you can actually see the full trajectory of the ball, with the wind and how it's affected. It's good and bad. It feels good because you have a better sense of where the ball is going, but it's also not good because I think if you're playing a human opponent, it's basically impossible to miss now. In terms of defense, which was a major focus this year, part of the reason why they were very happy that Richard Sherman, of course, Super Bowl champion cornerback for the Seattle Seahawks, was on the cover this year, is they did a lot of stuff on every level of the defense. To start with the defensive line in the trenches, they have new mechanics now where you can get a jump off the ball to get to the quarterback better. You can also choose easily with just a simple button press, either a strong power move or a speed move. Which, if you know football, different defensive ends and whatnot, you typically use different moves to try and get past offensive tackles and guards to try and get to the quarterback. So if you have a power rusher, you're better off obviously using strength moves and power moves. And if you have a speed rusher, you're, you know, kind of like the Jason Pierre-Paul of the Giants, and also Humanure of the Falcons, you're probably better off using a speed move, in fact, you're having a faster guy. Of course, there's also now some really great ways to upgrade all your players. So you can turn a power rusher into a speed rusher or make him very well balanced if you want. What happens is that now, in between each week of the season, they've gotten rid of the hot-cold feature from past years and have, in franchise mode, a thing called confidence meter. And what you can do is you can choose to do two things. You can either do confidence for the upcoming game, which basically means that for 1 week, your guy is going to be feeling a little bit better. He's going to be feeling, you know, if your confidence is above a 50, basically, you get boosts to your overall stats. It's under 50, though, so you had a couple of bad games in a row, the team's on a losing streak, you're eliminated from playoff contention, your confidence is going to drop, and so your stats. What you can also do, though, is you can put those points into permanent training, and what you can do is then make your player faster, stronger, you know, better throwing accuracy for quarterbacks, stuff like that, if you want. And speaking of quarterbacks, the accuracy mode for basically all the accuracy for quarterbacks has been tweaked. What it used to be in Madden was you basically had two kinds of passers. You had your Tom Brady's and your Peyton Manning's, who were always pinpoint accuracy. Every pass they threw was perfect. And then you had your Eli Manning's and your maybe you're like your Michael Vick's and whatnot, who were a lot more haphazard and passes would often, you know, sail over the target or be thrown in the dirt just because. What they've done now is there's a third where you can be slightly inaccurate, where depending on where you are in the pocket, if you're on the run, if you're under pressure, or if you're just not that great a quarterback, kind of, let's say, like a Geno Smith, Mark Sanchez, guys like that, your passes will, if you have the time, they'll still kind of get to where they're going, but they might be a little behind the receiver, they might be a little in front, they might be a little low, and what we see now are brand new wide receiver animations. They're making these great catches behind the back, one-handed catches, sliding catches, catches where they put their tippy toes down on the sideline and then fall out of bounds. Really, really impressive stuff. Wow. So in terms of all the new features that they've done with Madden, there is a lot of stuff that they've added this year.
Wow. And what about as far as online play? I noticed with some of the online play with previous titles, it was kind of a lag in playing online. Have they fixed that, or is it pretty much the same, or you don't even notice it?
I will say from what I've played online, there is a little bit of lag. Not a lot. Most of the time you actually see it in the kicking game, like when the power meter is obviously going up and down, and it seems that like when you hit it, there's just that little bit of delay. So you need to hit the kick. For me, you have to hit the kicking meter a little early when you want to get it to full power. You got two, same thing on deep passes. A lot of times when the ball is in the air for a long time, I noticed a little bit of lag. Not nearly as bad as I would say in previous years, but I definitely think that you'll pick up on it here and there depending on how strong your internet connection is.
All right, great. Now, let's move on to Ubisoft. They're scaling back the development for games for the Wii U. Now, first of all, is this a wise move?
Well, I think it is for them because looking at the numbers, Ubisoft games just aren't selling on the Wii U because there just aren't a lot of Wii U games out there. At least I should say games that are mature rated. The Just Dance series for Ubisoft, they said they will continue to use for the Wii and the Wii U because that sells very well. But if people are playing Assassin's Creed, they're playing it on Xbox, they're playing it on PlayStation. They're not playing it on Wii U. It just seems to be that the Wii U now has become very much everyone's second system. It's something that you want just for Mario Brothers or for Legend of Zelda or things like that. And what happens is that for the really good games, well, I shouldn't say those games aren't good, but for the games that have really been driving the industry the past few years, and really been at the forefront of everybody's mind, Call of Duty, Assassin's Creed, things like that, people also have an Xbox or a PlayStation. And so what happens is you have two systems, you're going to probably pick up Assassin's Creed and Call of Duty and all those games on those other, not on a Nintendo system. And this is something that has really hit Ubisoft in particular. And their gross year, they only had 3% of their sales come from the Wii U, and they had almost nothing of that, from that being the Assassin's Creed franchise, which of course is their bread and butter. But what they have said, at least because they promised it, they did say that Watch Dogs would at some point come out for Wii U, but that would be the last M-rated game that Ubisoft will put out in the Wii U until its audience shows that they want to play those games on that system.
Okay, great. Now let's move on to Tales of Exilia 2. What's the storyline behind Tales of Exilia 2?
Well, this is obviously a sequel to Tales of Exilia 1, but it basically takes place a year after the end of Tales of Exilia 1. What happens is that Mia Maxwell, of course, who is the great spirit, she was in control of it when she sacrificed herself to allow enough mana to sustain the worlds of Risa, Maxia, and Olympios for a little while longer. What happens is in a year, Jude and the rest of the gang are desperately hard at work trying to find a way to now exist peacefully between these two worlds that have been joined together. This game, though, follows part of the events of what happened at the end of Tales of Exilia 1 is, and as a comic book fan, you'll probably appreciate this, is that now there's these things called fractured dimensions. And so basically, where there was one universe with two worlds that have come together, there's now multiple universes. And what's happening is that all these universes, much like you'd see in a Marvel universe or the DC universe, are some of them are slight variations on the main universe, the prime universe, the universe that most of the gameplay takes place in. And or some of them are extremely different. You know, all the good guys are bad guys, and things like that. You know, opposite worlds and all that. And so what happens is that this main character, the new main character, Luther, he has this amazing ability where he can travel into these different dimensions, and his sole job is to destroy them before their existence threatens the prime universe. So most of the game is basically where Luther is going to these different prime universes while, of course, uncovering a conspiracy that's going on behind the scenes for the corporation he works for, destroying, you know, basically like the evil versions of main characters from the first game or these massive monsters. And it's actually, from what I saw, what I've played of it, I should say, it's actually been really a lot of fun. I don't want to give away too much more than that. I've probably already given away, the first third of the game, so I don't want to spoil too much more for folks. Well, I mean, it's a JRPG. There's a lot, obviously, that's going to be happening there. And trust me, there's a lot of twists and a lot of turns, a lot of things that you're not going to see coming. But if you really love the Tales series, if you really love the first Tales of Exilia, I think for the most part, you're going to really love Tales of Xillia 2.
All right. And when it comes to the strategy guide, that Tales of Xillia 2 strategy guide, this game is reportedly like 40-plus hours. And when you get a strategy guide for a game like this, how long does it take for them to write a strategy guide for, you know, a game that long?
Oh, goodness. Well, it's hard to say because there's so many collectibles and little things to do in Tales of Xillia 2 that for them to give you a full rundown, full rendition of everything that's in that game, it could easily take them 4 to 5 times as long as it'll take you to play through it with the help of a strategy guide. People pretty much know at one point, you know to look for hidden item, where to look for hidden items after a while. If you've been doing this as long as we've been playing games, you know that there's going to be a collectible, you know, just off camera, behind this corner, behind this chair kind of thing, where the places to look. But usually, you know, the developers are good at still sticking a few of them out of the way. So it could take 4 to 5 times as long to write this, because you got to play through it, you got to double check everything, you got to lay out maps, you got to lay out, I mean, and obviously I'm sure Bandai Namco has helped with this a lot. But it's a process to put together a strategy guide for each RPG. That's no lie.
Now let's move on to Professor Layton versus Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney. How does the game style of Professor Layton and Phoenix Wright come together for a player for this particular title?
Well, you know, this was definitely a marriage that I think a lot of people were really curious about, and I think that in most ways, in how they were able to bring the two characters together, it worked. They come together in an alternate universe where they basically have to stop a witch trial, and what happens is that you have the courtroom scenes of Phoenix Wright, but instead of having to go and find clues, you solve puzzles instead with Professor Layton. So when you solve the puzzles with Layton, that's how you find your clues. You bring them back to Phoenix Wright, and then the both of them can yell objection in the courtroom to try and catch people lying and whatnot in the same mechanics that you would probably see in a Phoenix Wright game. And what's interesting, I think, is that you could probably jump in. As long as you've played one of the series, I think you'll probably be okay to jump into this. I definitely would recommend having played both. I think you'll get the best appreciation out of it. The story, a little bit convoluted. I think if you're a Phoenix Wright fan or a Professor Layton fan, you think you're going to be a little shocked by how convoluted things get, but that's what happens sometimes when you mix universes. But I definitely think in terms of gameplay, taking the best parts of Phoenix Wright in terms of the courtroom scenes and taking the best part of Professor Layton in terms of the puzzles, I think was the right move here.
All right, and there you have it. Ray Carcillo, the review editor at Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGMNow.com, RayCarcillo.com. You can also follow Ray Carcillo on Twitter. It's at Ray Carcillo. Make sure you check out all these games. Man, Ray, thanks so much for joining us each week, man.
Oh, thank you, Sean. I really appreciate it.
All right, cool. We'll be back right after this.